Can't hear nothing.
Hello, we can't hear anything.
Here, just start that over again and say.
Okay. All right. You want to do the whole thing over again? Or just roll call, please?
Okay, the meeting was called to order at 7:02 p.m. And we'll do the roll call again. Sorry. Mr. Newberg?
Here.
Ms. Tanichi?
Here.
Ms. Vidomsky?
Here.
Ms. Berrios Pettis is
excused.
Mr. Kurtica?
Present.
Mr. Sill?
Here.
Mr. Chevrolet?
Here.
Ms. Valdonis Bliss Smith?
Here.
Mr. Heider?
Here.
Record to reflect again. And for the first time, that there are eight people present. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garfalo. Number four, additions, deletions, corrections, adoption of the agenda.
I have no additions or deletions.
Perfect. All right. Number five, public portion. Anybody from the public like to speak?
Yes, I do. Kim Shepherd.
Okay. Please state your address for us too, please.
14 Bonanto Drive.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just voicing my concerns over everything with the approval for the Franklin Avenue subdivision. Just making sure that everything is approved, looked at before the approval goes in.
Here.
Okay, thank you so much, Kim.
Yes.
We are discussing that tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Anybody else in the public like to speak? Just hit the button, name and address for record.
Hi there, I'm Lisa Braley. Hi. This is Lisa Braley. I live at 7 Grandview Boulevard. I just wanted to bring up a good topic, which is that last weekend I went to New York Days at the Shoreline Trolley Museum and discussed with them the possibility of bringing the first electric locomotive in the United States, which is from Derby. And many people probably know this, but back to Derby for a visit next year for the anniversary. And they were very interested. Obviously, it would have to be paid for, and that amount is not known. But if expenses were covered, they would be happy to come and bring a volunteer troop to talk about trolleys, which would align well with the fact that Mr. Salem from Trolley Point is also interested in bringing that locomotive here. So there may be some money there. I would also donate a good substantial amount, and would think it would be great to figure out some way to incorporate that into any plans, because it's a beautiful item and Shoreline Trolley has it sitting way in the dark in the back of Barn 8, if anybody's been there, and it's a really, really cool thing to see. And we are a great part of history there. Yep.
Anyone else from the public like to speak? Anyone else from the public like to speak? Step up, please.
Frederick Pikorowski, 216 Derby Avenue. First, I'd like to give a compliment. So once again, I know it's a little bit of a surprise, but thank you for filling the potholes on Derby Avenue with, I forgot the name of the little street, but it was quick. It was done quickly through the website. And again, thank you. Although it looks like it's been filled a number of times because the fill just does not seem to want to stay. But on the tax increase, it's getting expensive to live here in Derby. I'm paying about $80 a week for a small house in property taxes. And due to the winter, which wasn't that, you know, wasn't that severe, about $100 a week just to heat the house. So $180.
Lost the mic.
Can't hear anything.
So anyway, getting back to that, so about $180 a week, the tax increase will make it about $190 a week. And with the situation in the Mideast, who knows what my heating expenses will be. So, and also with regards to the building permits, the one-time money, I hope that's going to a one-time expense. Otherwise, if it's going to a recurring expense, that money won't be available for next year. And that'll mean another tax increase. To kind of quote Ayn Rand, you know, $250,000 in just permits, that's a huge expense to be paid out by businesses. Some years ago, when I think Steferio was mayor, he pointed out how he sold a pipeline to the water company. Everyone's there like, oh, yeah, we're getting money from the water company. But where's the water company going to get that money from? Duh, your pockets.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. So anyway, just saying, you know, keep in mind it's getting tough out there for the middle class and everyone to, you know, the cost of food is going up. The cost of everything is going up. And to be able to just keep our house here in Derby. Yes, I realize your costs are going up too, but just remember it's getting tough out there for a lot of people. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else in the public like to speak? Mine's not working, Mark. Thank you. Anyone else in the public like to speak?
Oh, and I also, Frederick Pikorowski, 216 Derby Avenue. I also promised the guy who's running the new rage rooms explicitly broken that after the meeting and talking about the tax increase, I would go over and check his business out and give it a plug here. So anybody else who's really PO'd about the tax increase, there's a place over at Elizabeth Street that used to be the Smile Dental Center, and you can go and break things over there.
Nice. Anyone else in the public like to speak?
All right, if we're returning, I'll return again. Lisa Brantley, 7 Grandview Boulevard. I got called the other day by your office about the Adopt-A-Spot program. And I would strongly encourage having a more active Adopt-A-Spot. I was for a while the only Adopt-A-Spot. I have this spot outside of Wittick Park. I'm in the process of sprucing it up again. I've trimmed the bushes and stuff. I'm trying to be a little better than I was last year. But one of the things about that was there's a $475 fee for paying for a sign and stuff that was kind of off-putting to the general citizen and potentially even to a business. And I asked and was given the reprieve, so I did not have to pay $475 for the privilege of purchasing plants and mulch and performing labor to have an Adopt-A-Spot. But I think there's a real potential in that if it were made a little bit more just accessible, pleasant, you know, not seem like a burden. I think the town could consider providing mulch and not charging a citizen $475. So I loved that I was contacted about that because it had been a couple of years since the program started. And I'd love to see it as a more active, thanked, encouraged kind of process. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else in the public like to speak? Anyone else in the public like to speak?
Mr. Mayor, Sarah Wadomsky, 95 Academy Hill Road. I would like to give a hearty congratulations to my fellow First Ward Alderman, Arthur Newberg, who graduated this weekend from UConn. He is an absolute asset to this board and to our community. And congratulations on graduating, and look forward to working with you and seeing everything that you'll be doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations, Arthur. Anyone else in the public like to speak?
Yes, hello, on Zoom. Dan Blisman, 30 Clark Street Extension.
Okay.
I just wanted to bring something up. I apologize. I don't have the agenda in front of me because I'm using my phone. But the line item regarding the appointment of William Harris for planning and zoning, when that line item is addressed, would you just be able to provide a current listing of the party affiliations of the members that are on the Board of Planning and Zoning? Just because I know that Mr. Jolic was registered as a Republican, and I see in the agenda that Mr. Harris is registered as a Democrat. And I know there's a certain standard of how many of each party, there can't be weighted too much to either side. So I was wondering if you could shed some light on that when you cover that item.
I don't have that information in front of me, but I can certainly get it to you by tomorrow.
But I just think it would be important to, if you were going to appoint him, to make sure that that's being followed correctly.
Okay. Anyone else in the public like to speak? All right, there you go. Okay. Number six, administration and appointments. 6.1, approval of minutes, April 11, 2024, regular meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Made by George, second by Ron. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. 6.2, refund of taxes. Monthly tax refunds. Move to approve tax refunds in the amount of $4,402.54, dated May 2nd, 2024. Do I have a motion?
So moved, Sarah.
Sarah, is there a second?
Second, Amy.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 6.3, appointments of board and commissions. 6.3.1, planning and zoning, effective immediately and expiring as indicated below. So 6.3.1.1, William C. Harris Jr., Democrat, expires in February 28th, 2029, to replace vacancy created by the resignation of Steve Jolic. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Made by George, there's a second.
Second, Sarah.
Okay, any discussion?
Just said it's contingent on we're following.
Yeah, we'll party. Make sure that is contingent upon the appropriate numbers of party.
It just members of the board and Mr. Mayor, the ordinance says that there cannot be more than a certain amount from the same party. The seat, Mr. Jolic was a Republican, but that's not a Republican seat. It just says that there can't be more than a certain amount from the same party. And we'll check it and get back to you.
Yep.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great. Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 6.4, Mayor's update. Postponement of city revaluation for 1 year. I am incredibly pleased to report that by working with our state legislative delegation, we were extremely optimistic that we will be able to delay the state mandated revaluation of all property for 1 year. It passed both in the House and the Senate, and we look forward to the governor signing it into law. Then we will need a vote of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, to finalize the postponement. This is a great option for the city to help ease the tax burden and impact of our housing market increases. So I thought that was very good news. And again, thank you to the delegation for working so hard to get that done. Any questions on that? Yep, good news. Second thing is new Public Works employee started this month. It was with great pleasure that I inform you that CJ Matto has started work with the Derby Public Works. I am very happy to have been able to hire a qualified Derby resident to fill a recent vacancy. I wish him well in his new position. He has a Class A CDL. He can operate all machinery there. He is a has plenty of public work experience. It really worked out well, and I'm happy to have him on board. Any questions on that? Derby librarian takes new post in Milford Library. I want to wish our ongoing head librarian, Scott Burrow, well in his new position as head librarian at the Milford Public Library. Therefore, we are looking for a new librarian. The position has been posted. So he informed us probably a month ago, and his last day is on Saturday. So we wish him well. Any questions on that? Johnson Control rebates for ineligible cost. By establishing a strong bipartisan partnership with our state legislative delegation, they were able to secure funding for previously ineligible costs on our energy efficiency plan with Johnson Controls. By working closely with our state delegation, we were able to receive reimbursements owed to the city. This will save the taxpayers more money. So again, great job by them on getting this done, and we'll be able to pay Johnson the Controls with that money that we owe them. Any questions on that? Additional funding for education. As you know, the state legislative session ended yesterday, and through the work of our state legislation delegation, Derby will receive $800,000 in additional funding for our school children. We are grateful to the delegation for their efforts. That's another huge boost for the education system in Derby. So we're very grateful for that. Any questions on that? And then finally, as we come up on the 349th anniversary of the City of Derby on Monday, May 13th, 2024, I want to focus on the day before for a moment and wish all the mothers, grandmothers, godmothers, and mother figures a happy Mother's Day. So well deserved. We all know how important mothers are to a family. I certainly could not do it without my wife with raising our four daughters. So I hope everybody enjoys their day. That's my update. Any questions on any of that? Okay. Hearing none, we will go to 7. Committee reports and recommendations. Community Relations Committee, Ron.
We do have a ordinance before us, which is going to take care of every park. We've had a problem with people leaving cars overnight in city parks. And of course, that's a detriment to the city if anything happens. So I'd like to read the following ordinance into the record.
You're good. No, you're good.
Okay. So I'd like to read the following ordinance into the record. It shall be unlawful for any person to enter upon the driveways or grounds within any city park or to park or cause to be parked within the parks any motor vehicle or trailer between the hours of 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. And I'll make that in the form of a motion.
Okay, Ron, is there a second?
Second.
Second, George. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have a question about that. In terms of parks, that's including Payton Park?
Yes.
I mean, to have it from 9 p.m. to 8 a.m. people can't use it?
Well, it's leaving cars overnight.
But it says to park or on the driveways or grounds. I mean, people use that to walk, exercise all the time. And I mean, there's football games. I remember when I used to coach, I'd go scouting and stuff. We'd get back 10, 11 o'clock at night sometimes, and we'd have a meeting in the field house. Are those coaches going to have to worry about coming out to being towed or ticketed? I mean, what is the concern about pet parking in, at Payton Park?
You know, sometimes the football games run longer than that, than 9 o'clock.
And what is the issue with that? I mean, isn't Wittick and Coon Hollow gated and locked anyways at night?
No.
So they're not anymore?
No. Oh. Well, it's the...
The issue at Wittick Park specifically is that the non-gated area, that front parking area, there's multiple cars parked overnight at this point. The gated area is not the concern.
My concern is with Payton, because again, high school events going on, and sometimes people, because I've left my car there overnight as a coach, as a parent, and I was, geez, you know, we're going to go somewhere and I'll pick it up the next morning. So, I mean... Well, what's the reason for they can't leave a car there? Different if it's habitual. If I'm parking my car there every night, maybe an habitual offender, but somebody once in a while leaves it there again. What if my car breaks down? I mean, well, it's stuck there.
Something like that, I can see. But we're responsible if there's a car on the property and anything happens, whether it gets broken into, stolen, causes a problem. But I don't know if the Corporation Council wants to tweak that a little bit for Payton Park.
Or excuse, is this just more liability and covering ourselves? Is this something that we're gonna...
Well, we have like 8 people parking up at Wittick Park leaving their cars overnight from the neighborhood right now.
So again, something like that where it's habitual, fine. I mean, is this, again, I'm looking at it for the person that leaves there again at a certain event or something, different things, and all of a sudden, geez, I went to support the town and community and I got a ticket or
it's a... I see Dave's point, and if we can just maybe amend this to reflect a later hour for Payton Park would make sense.
Like when there's a function going on, when the park is being used.
But even having the people that go walking in the morning at 6 a.m. I mean, if it's an overnight thing, why can't we just say from 12 p.m. to 5 a.m. or something? That'll cover your overnight and any of those morning walkers and stuff. I mean, realistically, you're breaking the ordinance if I go there at 7 a.m. and walk because I'm on the grounds.
So in terms of drafting, you can handle this a number of different ways. One way to handle it is to list the parks, right? So within, and then you list the parks where you want the absolute ban. And you leave the other ones out. We can certainly do that. In fact, one draft, an earlier draft, we had a list of parks. And then it was all parks. And so then we changed it to all parks because fewer words is better than more words when you draft something. So the other way, maybe, Dave, to change this, to tweak it, is to play with the hours if you want, to make the 9 p.m., I don't know, you move it to 11. I don't know any high school football games that had you there till 11, or you know what I mean?
Maybe we can just change that from 11 and then 6 a.m.
And then you move the other one to 6 a.m.
No, again, I'm just referring to that as a coach. We would go scout and stuff. Then we'd come back and maybe have a meeting or something in the field house. And we may be there till 11, 12 o'clock as we prepare. Now, it's, oh, geez, we can't prepare because
run out and tell them, don't tag my car.
I wasn't sure if it was more of an issue of us just protecting ourselves liability-wise by having this.
That is an issue. That's at least that's what was expressed, I think.
I mean, if no offense, if they're not going to bust chops and ticket the people for there unless they're habitual, then I'm fine with the way it is.
wait a minute. So do you want to adjust the hours so that, you know, you want to make it so it's fairly consistent in some ways? Do you want to move it?
I think adjusting the hours is probably a better idea.
To move it to, say, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m.? Mm-hmm. And that way you can get the morning joggers and walkers, and they can use it. And 11 a.m. is, I'll bet if you look at most communities, most communities have a park closure ordinance of some kind that's before 11 p.m. But 11 p.m. would be, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. is would that be acceptable?
Okay. I think so.
All right. So we do 11 p.m. to 6 a.m.
So, good point, Dave.
So if you take that as an amendment on your motion, move the ordinance as
I'll amend it from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Who seconded it? George, you.
Yeah, I'll agree.
Okay. Any other discussion?
We're allowed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 7.2, Property and Development Committee, no action. 7.3, Finance and Public Safety Committee, Sarah?
7.3.1, Moratorium on Tax Incentive Ordinance Benefits. Move to enact a moratorium on the tax incentive ordinance benefits. I'll make that into the form of a motion.
Made by Sarah. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by George. Any discussion?
This is for the benefit of board members and the public. This is an ordinance that is not going to, we're tweaking it in our finance and public safety subcommittee. We will be looking at language as well as other items in this ordinance, which the previous board was looking at to adjust. So we will have an update on it next month. And again, we'll continue to work on coming up with an ordinance that works for both businesses and the citizens in our city. That's all.
If I could just say one thing, is this motion to enact a moratorium accepting pending applications? Because I think you have one on the agenda tonight.
Yes. So because the item that's coming up on the agenda in 8.5 was submitted before this, we will hear that application. Thank you, attorney.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. New business, 8.1, Derby Hall of Fame, Class of 2025. Announcement of Class of 2025 by Jack Walsh. Just hit the button. There you go.
There we go. Okay. Actually, it's the class of 2024, which marks the 18th class of members of the Derby Hall of Fame, which was started 18 years ago. And with these two new members, we'll have 66 members. And I would urge everyone to go and take a look at the people that are in the Derby Hall of Fame. It's an incredible, incredible group of people. I don't have time to go through all of them tonight, and I won't even try. But let me give you the two new ones. And I think it's very interesting. One may have been the most popular person ever lived in Derby. And the second one is a woman who made her mark, not locally, but internationally. And I'll start with her first. Her name was Eliza Jane Gillett Bridgman. Her father ran the Derby Fish Company. And I think if you look back at Derby history, you know how important that was. But she took a different tact. She didn't go into business. She wanted to become an educator. She was a teacher, became a school principal. But then her one wish in life was to become a missionary. And she did become a missionary. She changed her church affiliation and was appointed a missionary to China, which was highly unusual at the time because she wasn't married. Highly unusual to have someone go and do that. Well, she got to China and she actually married the first American missionary to China. They worked together in education in China for a few years. Sadly, the husband died. She came back to Connecticut, came back to Derby for a while, 2 years, because her health was suffering, but she recovered, which is kind of amazing because at one point when she came back to Derby, She got run over by a sled and she still recovered and went back to China. And her history there is kind of remarkable. She started her own school, which today still exists as a women's college in China. So that's our first Hall of Famer. Our second Hall of Famer, George Blakeman, did a little bit of everything in Derby. Okay. He was a businessman, served on many boards and commissions. He was a legislator. He was a Mason. He was an investor in businesses. And to tell you how appreciated he was, I've got an account of the New York Times when he turned 100 years old. And I'm going to read a little bit because I don't think we've ever had a celebration like this since. And this article is from the New York Times, not the local paper. It says, George Blakeman, the oldest man in Connecticut, and also the oldest Mason in the United States, died at his home in Derby this morning. He was 100 years and 2 months of age. Death was caused by exhaustion. I guess so. 3 weeks ago, he was seized with a severe cold and a complete collapse followed. On October 10th, previously, Mr. Blakeman reached the 100th anniversary of his birth, and the entire city of Derby celebrated the event. At noon, factory, locomotive, and steamboat whistles were blowing continuously for 5 minutes, and flags and buntings were displayed. In the evening, a public mass meeting was held in the Sterling Opera House. Enormous birthday cakes were sent, and the centenarian by business houses and the local lodges of Masons paraded the streets. Factories in which Mr. Blakeman formerly had been interested closed for the day. So that's George Blakeman. Those are our two new members. And I want to point out that the Hall of Fame has a location. The Hall of Fame is at the entrance to the Derby Greenway, surrounding the National Alliance Hall of Fame, or the National Alliance, Humane Alliance Fountain. So there's 66 members, and this didn't cost the city a dime. Okay. Every year we recognize two or three, and their monument is a brick on the plaza. We're not spending any money for it. In fact, we have money in the bank. It's endowed, so we'll never have to take any money out of the city because we've sold the bricks and that money has been set aside and it's endowed. So that's the first bit of good news. Second bit of good news, excuse me, lose my voice. Last year, this board approved a historic plaque project for the downtown area. And, you know, we said at the time that this was going to be a public-private partnership, that the city wouldn't bear the entire cost, that we'd try to get the city to pay for plaques on city buildings, city properties. And then we'd ask private property owners to do the same for theirs. We have four new plaques coming in the next week or two, and the city is only paying for one of them. The other three are being paid for by the Valley Community Foundation. Let me just find my list quickly. The new plaques will be going on the Lodge of Elks, which is well over 100 years old. The second one is on Lincoln Senior Housing, or as was better known when I went there, Derby High School. We also have a plaque going on Derby Neck Library, which for your benefit, most people don't realize it, is the oldest public library in the city of Derby, not Derby Public. And let's see, the fourth one, we're working with the state of Connecticut DOT, but the fourth one will go on the Derby Shelton Bridge. So those will be, in the next couple of weeks, you'll see those. So that means at this point in time, we'll have 13 plaques, and the city has paid for 7. 6 have been paid for privately. We'll be putting in another order probably next 2 weeks. And 3 of the 4 that we have right now are being paid for by developers in the city. So again, it's a great project. Remember our pastor street and also recognizing what's coming on right now. Okay.
Jack, how much does a plaque cost?
$750. Okay. And anyone could get one. I put one on my house. You know, when I was here last year, I said, well, if I'm going to ask people to do it, I got to do it myself. So last year I put a plaque on, but I didn't put the city seal on it. But once you approved the project, I did go back, took the old one off, which I'll bring to my family in Ireland, and I put the symbol on. So we would work with anyone on that, okay? Well, this is not officially city. The Derby Athletic Hall of Fame also this week announced 7 new members. And, you know, I'm not involved with that committee, but I just thought I'd give them credit and recognize more good news for the city. So the new members of the Athletic Hall of Fame in Derby are Jamie Bartone, class of 2003, Maureen Chacot, I don't know if I'm killing her name, 1995, Joe Martin, 1991, Ralph Romano, 1968, Greg Spock, 1982, Mike Sullivan, 1976, and John Vitello, 1974. And they will be having a banquet later in the year for that. And finally, one last good piece of news. You know, I don't know if it's such good news for me. You know, last year, we had a company come from London that produces documentaries for the Discovery Channel. And they spent a day here at film, the Sterling Opera House. I'm happy to tell you that that will be shown next Friday night at 10 o'clock, but you have to have a subscription to the Discovery Channel. I'm hoping that they tell the whole story. And it's just not ghosts, but it's great for the city to be featured by a company that came all the way from London to do the story of Sterling Opera House. So that's it. Thank you.
Jack, we might have missed it, but when did the Mr. Blakeman die?
Give me a minute. I've got it here. I just have to find the right page. There it is. 1899. It was from 1799 to 1899. You need another year to get a couple of centuries, another century onto it. Yeah, ran out of gas. Year short. So, but again, we're the only Valley town that has a Hall of Fame. And the people who came through this town were remarkable. They made the city what it was, and you're all making what it will be in the future. So good luck.
Thank you for all you do on this, Jack.
Mr. Walsh, thank you so much. All right. So 8.2, he went and did that ahead of schedule, but he got that done. So 8.3, easement reduction request. Theodore and Cynthia Eswan, 43 Franklin Ave. Discussion and possible action on a request to reduce City of Derby easement at 43 Franklin Avenue. You're good. You're good. Done.
Hope I hit the right button.
Yeah, you're good.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the Board of Aldermen. I'm Attorney John Sponheimer. I represent Mr. Theodore Eswan, who is at 43 Franklin Avenue, regarding the proposed easement reduction. It's a pleasure to follow Jack Walsh, who I can honestly say I've known for, it's almost getting close to 7 decades, but he certainly is a gem for the city of Derby, and I'm very pleased to call him a friend and just see what he does from year to year. He's a very special individual. This parcel of land was acquired as 2 lots by the owner and his wife, Ms. Restaurant. And then the lots merged together. And now Mr. Eswan is looking to divide the lots into 2 lots, but both will be very large lots. The building area on one is 27 of the total area is 27,117 square feet on one. And the other lot is 27,112 square feet. City engineer Kevin White and Mr. Eswan's engineers have gone over the easement, the small portion of the existing easement, which is no longer necessary for the city. The remaining easement will still be 42 feet wide. It covers whatever is in the trenches will stay the way they are exactly now. But I think rather than trying to put a presentation right now, I think Mr. White will be able to confer with your board in the intervening period within a month, and we'll come back. Because I think if you hear from him from a representative point of the engineer, it's far more important than me just telling you what I think is the best interest of the owner and also the best interest of the city. So rather than tie your board up, I was asked to continue this for 1 month, and in the meantime, to hear from Mr. White through some sort of report, which he may have.
Very good.
Yep.
Attorney Spotheimer, good to see you and good to speak with you on this. Good to see Mr. Estwan. If you would be kind enough in the next month, if you could get us a title search on it and give us copies of the existing easements that you seek to reduce. I think maps were sent late this afternoon and received by the city. I haven't had a chance to look at them yet. But if I have any questions, I'd like to be able to talk to you.
That's no problem whatsoever. We will order the title searches immediately tomorrow and get copies of the maps and any other encumbrances which may be on the property.
Perfect, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, 8.4, Derby Middle School mural presentation. Presentation regarding mural of exterior of the Derby Middle School. You're good. You're good. It's good.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Susan Schroeder, chair of the Derby Cultural Commission. Really appreciate the time. I'm very thankful to be here for this opportunity and welcome a lot of our alders that are new and some that I know have been supportive already to me and our members. This is my final official act as chair. I'll be resigning due to health issues, but I'm here to ask for your support on murals. For years, a couple of our colleagues and I, we've been trying to explore how to get permanent art here to gain a foothold in the city of Derby. You know, we had the wonderful artist, Rich DiCarlo. I remember when we first moved here, and he had his shop on Elizabeth Street, and it was just fantastic to be able to know that on a Friday night we could go and just have a glass of wine and look at the gallery and explore and get our imaginations going and get dialogue going. But we really haven't had that kind of presence here. And so that's what we're trying to establish to do both here in the city of Derby and elsewhere. Well, in walks Rise Up Murals, which is Matt Conway Jr. They're based out of Hartford, and they've established beautiful murals all over Connecticut in every city. And so he will be answering questions if he's here. He was going to try to be here on Zoom after my brief introduction and our presenters. So tonight's focus is a mural at Derby Middle School. And we do have the support of Principal Rachel Caggiano. She had approached us last summer. She expressed that she had the funding and that she had the students, and they really did want to go forward with this. And we couldn't believe it. We're like, oh, okay, you know, this is what we've been looking to do. And of course, you know, engaging students is really the optimum thing to do because they're invested in their city. So we plant the seeds here. And as a matter of fact, during Derby Day of summer 2022, one of our renowned residents, Lisa Braley, who I was hoping was, oh, there you are, was here. And Lisa, as a commuter into New York City every day, she became enamored with the Metro North trains, and she developed a photography exhibit, which we displayed at Derby Day. It was fabulous. There was people mingling, talking, and ultimately that is, I don't know if it's permanently displayed over it.
It's permanently on display at Mount Sinai.
Yeah, isn't that something? Okay, so Derby's represented over, and this is, you know, phenomenal artwork. We have a lot of talent here in town. So anyway, I would like you to please welcome our guests and presenters. And our first will be Gianna Atkar, and she's going to be giving a PowerPoint presentation. And afterwards, we'll welcome Gloria Lanau, who is a cultural volunteer, and she will be giving her feedback on her experience of her hometown in Keene, New Hampshire. With that, go ahead.
Thank you. Is it on?
It's on, yeah.
Okay. So to start my presentation on the benefits of murals in Derby, I wanted to highlight what murals contributed to various cities across the country. Murals, they pay homage to history and culture of the people living in a city. They beautify urban spaces, and they provide a positive outlet to inspire creativity as well as boost tourism and local economy. They are a powerful way to make cities more vibrant, engaging, and meaningful places to thrive. One example of this on the next slide is the Frederick Douglass mural in New Bedford, Massachusetts, where he first experienced life in freedom. And with historical figures in Derby like Francis Osborne Kellogg and David Humphreys, they could be commemorated in a similar way due to all of the impacts that they had on Derby throughout their lifetime. After that slide, on slide three, thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. Next one. Yep, and then scroll down one more. All right. Next, we have the Waterbury Park Mirage murals. These were done by muralist Joanne Moron, who worked with students in Waterbury Public Schools to create these murals. She's worked with thousands of people to create murals for public spaces, and this was for an after-school arts program known as the ASAP, and it gave students an opportunity to like work together and create art to beautify their city. On the next slide, we have water tanks in a city in New Mexico. They were used as a canvas for these murals. We could do something similar because I know we recently implemented the new water tank right next to the high school, and it can be also used as a canvas in a similar way to add as a place for art to be portrayed for the community. On the next slide, after that, we have I reached out to youth at my school, and I asked them how art benefits communities or cities' revival in their opinion. And on the next slide, we have some words that they said. So one student, Kevin McGuire, who's graduating in 2025, he basically went to New York and he traveled and he visited Juilliard School of Music, and he saw these beautiful murals that brought cultures together and depicted European, Latin, African, Asian art. And it showed not just the gap between cultures, and it unites people together. And on the next slide after that, we have two more students that were mentioned, Savannah Harold and Quinlan Gray. Savannah said that art highlights and brings awareness to social issues, and Quinlan basically said how art unites people, whether you have different opinions or common ideas. It brings people of all different races, nationalities, ideologies together. And then moving on from that, we have examples of how murals are used in Derby High School, the building itself. Students in the advanced art program at Derby High School have the opportunity to create murals inside the building to share with all the students. So one that stood out to me was greatness is determined by how much you're willing to put into what you do, from LeBron James. And as you can see, these students who have like real artistic abilities are able to create these beautiful murals to inspire people within the school. And there's another example too that I thought was really great after that one. It was the Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh, and a student recreated that and put that in the hallway of our school as well too. That one, yes. And then we have art from the middle school that they did with the Derby Cultural Commission for Martin Luther King Day. and they won, and they were able to have their art displayed in the Derby Cultural Commission too. And then lastly, on the next slide, we have the Beautify nonprofit organization. They believe that people everywhere should have access to art, and they believe that art is not a luxury, but it is a necessity. And they're all about bringing bright and colorful places that attract tourism and making local businesses more money by providing a landmark that can attract more customers and things like that. And I think that is all I have for you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Good evening, everyone. How are you? I'm Gloria Luneau. I've lived in Derby for many years. I was living in Seymour, and I just love coming back to Derby. It's such a great town. My kids grew up here. And I just want to say, with all the revitalization going down in town, which I'm so excited about, I mean, everyone's complaining about the traffic, and I'm thinking, just give it time. It takes a long time. I mean, this is changing so drastically, and I'm so excited about it. I can't say enough thank you for everyone that's making this possible. I'm just really, again, so excited. And a lot of people have mentioned that they're going to lose the integrity of a small town. And I could see the point, because buildings being torn down, it's not going to be like the old Derby. For those of us who have been here for many years, growing up, and you never had a problem finding a job. There's always a factory you went to, you walked in, you got hired and had a job. And that's as easy as it was years ago. But now, bringing back to the town where I grew up in New Hampshire, they've done much the same. They've actually, it's a very family-oriented town. And all the new stores they put on the outskirts, and they kept the integrity of small town look in the downtown area. And they've done such a beautiful job. And again, when people mentioned about losing the look of Derby, what this town has done, it put murals all through town. And it all has to do with the makeup of how that town was created. And the diversity of it, they've done a beautiful job. I called the Chamber of Commerce. They sent me a brochure, and they actually have a tour. It's all about the makeup of town, and they have actual tours that people go on, many groups. The murals probably average about 30 by 40 feet, and it's done such a beautiful job downtown. Every time I go back, I do that tour. And it's brought so much to the town. I'm sure you've all heard of Weiland, that does all the paintings in the big cities, huge murals, and the water tanks that he's done. And that visual says it all. You can just get the feel of a small town. And that's why I thought it was important to talk to you about that. Now that everything's in the planning stages, to see if that could be a reality. Because once all these old buildings are gone, no one in another generation so won't even know what happened to Derby, whatever, wherever it came from. It's so important to know the history from where it started and where it's coming to right now. It's something to be very proud of, everyone that's ever had a part of Derby government. And like I said, I just wanted to come here tonight and just talk to you about it. I have the brochure here for anyone to take a look at it. They've planned it so well. There were artists from all over the world that went down there. They set up a whole program to put the whole thing together, fundraising. It's magnificent. So I just want to share that with you. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm not sure if anyone can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, great. Hey, this is Matt from Rise Up. Just wanted to thank everybody for giving us an opportunity to talk about public art here and, you know, bringing public art to Derby. Really thank everyone who's been involved in this process so far. Like Susan mentioned, this is multi-year conversation now, and we finally, you know, have a wall that the principal at the middle school is excited about. We have students at the school already participating in a creative leadership after school program to help come up with the designs for the murals around town as well. So this is a really inclusive process, and all the other organizations that, you know, were mentioned in other cities across the country, you know, that's what Rise Up does here in the state. So we've done over 250 mural projects from Stamford up to Putnam, working locally with communities, with students, with professional muralists here in the state, creating all this economic development that was mentioned before. So we really hope for support on being allowed to use the middle school to really launch this project and put a mural on the outside. And hope it's just the beginning of many more things to come here in Derby. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Does the Board of Education, have they voted on this and approved this?
All approved.
Is there a specific design that you're looking, a mural that you're looking to put up? So we, you know, if we're going to do this,
that's part of the process. So the after school program with the students, one of the sessions a couple of weeks ago, they started researching the history of Derby as part of the program. And so they're going to help come up with, you know, what are the major concepts, ideas that are in there. And then Katiana, who is on the Zoom as well, she's a professional muralist, professional artist. She's going to take those concepts and actually, you know, create a beautiful piece of artwork that reflects the town. And obviously, you know, the school, aldermen, whoever needs to approve it, you know, gets approval and go through some design iterations. So all that is, you know, fully transparent, and we work with everybody to get to that final design.
Any other questions?
Hi, this is Sarah. What is the cost of doing something like this at the middle school? And did the Board of Ed Finance Committee approve any particular amount to be put towards a potential mural?
Yeah, so we're actually folding the cost of the mural into the after school program funding. So the money is actually coming from the after school program that we're actually doing with the kids. So part of that budget is going to pay for the supplies, the materials, and everything that actually needs to happen there. And it's a, you know, full year after school program.
Mr. Conway, George Kurtica here. I was on the school board for 14 years, so I believe this was the grant that Ms. Caggiano applied for.
I believe so. Yeah, I'm not sure the specific of, you know, what grant she applied to for it, but I know there's after school, you know, grant funding that she was approved for. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know she was a great muralist. Being on the board for 14 years, I didn't know that. But she's a good person, and she applied for a lot of grants for the school system, especially the middle school. So as long as the board gets to see what kind of designs before they actually go up on the school, I think that's what our members are looking for.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to see some previews, you know, of a mural, Katiana is actually going to be painting a mural by the cafeteria inside the middle school before the end of the school year with some students. So there'll at least be something small for the kids to enjoy before we take on the bigger project outside.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, this is Sarah again. I just back to, I understand it's, you know, going through the after school program funding, but what is the cost for something like this? You know, just if we're looking to expand upon this program, you know, into the city beyond the school system, you know, what are we looking at?
Thank you. Yeah. The market rate for, you know, what we charge to make the murals happen is typically between $20 and $30 a square foot. Depends on, again, you know, the height, if do we need a lift, do we, how detailed is the mural, but $20 to $30 a square foot is a good number to budget for communities.
And that all inclusive?
Yeah, that would be, you know, materials and everything. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
You know, one other thing I'll add, as the town may, you know, think about expanding here, we partner to get a lot of our own funding as well. So in addition to, you know, this after school grant, I just applied for a 3-year grant through the New Haven or the Valley Foundation to keep after school programs, you know, going in Derby. So we don't just come into a town and just look for, you know, that town to just, you know, find the grants themselves or whatever. We really look to how can we make 2 + 2 = 5 here, and you know, double down and bring some funding to the community as well.
I do have one question. How long does the mural last before it has to be fixed up, redone?
Yeah, you know, there's some murals in Philadelphia right now that are 30 plus years old and, you know, still looking really great. We use the, you know, the best quality products. You know, we have murals out there that have been there for, we did our first mural in 2016 and it's hasn't needed to be touched up at all. And the other thing, not that the middle school needs to worry about it necessarily, we've done murals on walls that have had graffiti and then there's no more graffiti on those walls for, you know, while the mural's up there. So it's a deterrent as well. For businesses and vandalism.
Daddy, help me get this bow out of my hand.
Any other questions? All right, here are no other questions. We will
we will
wait to see what they come up with and bring to the board in the future. Okay. Sure. 8.5, tax incentive application for 33 Elizabeth Street LLC, Joseph Wall. Discussion and possible action. Hit the button.
The light goes on. Attorney Dominic Thomas, representing the developers. Before we leave the art work, I would just like to point out to them that in our offices, we're at 315 Main Street. My former partner, James Cohen, a noted Derbyite, as we know, received 3 postcards of late 1800s, early 1900s Derby, and he contracted with a company that computer enhanced them into full-size painting-like things. And they depict, for example, you know, the corner of Elizabeth and Main, and they depict, if you're looking up Main Street from our building, which I don't think existed at that time, and you could identify the exact location where Santa Claus really lived, which was Howard and Barber's, not at the North Pole. But if you're willing to come into our offices, certainly, and look at those paintings, they would be wonderful murals because they depict what Derby was in the beginning of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century in the 1900s, and certainly do not be afraid to ask local businesses to contribute to whatever you need for art. It was interesting for me to come in here tonight, first of all, to see Jack Walsh, the picture hanging in my office of the 1960 grammar school, St. Mary's Grammar School class. We are standing next to each other. So we've known each other since Sister Beatrice Marie in kindergarten. And the other picture in my office is the 1960 grammar school, St. Mary's Grammar School undefeated basketball team, in which in the second row, because obviously I'm never in the first row of anything, is this power forward we affectionately refer to as Spoonie, who was in seventh grade. So it's like a homecoming. But I'm here to talk to you about the UI building development, which I worked on as the land use attorney. There may be some people in this room that remember or had to walk in there with an envelope full of cash given by their parents to pay the UI bill, because that was the corporate headquarters from UI. And it is a wonderful, beautiful building. And as you may know, I do a little bit of land use in the Valley. And one of the things I think that's that I've often pushed is that while Derby may not have Bridgeport Avenue and Derby may not have the power plant, what Derby has is the single place, the only place in the state of Connecticut that is really emblematic of transportation-oriented development. It's the only place in the state of Connecticut where two major bus lines, a Metro North train station, two major highways, and a transit district intersect at a single point, and two rivers. And the Department of Community and Economic Development are tired of hearing me saying that, because they should be writing out blank checks or giving blank checks to the city of Derby for development. But since they're not, they are helping, but they're not. When developers come in to develop, when you want to develop a town, you've got to create people. You've got to create the roofs. Just recently, in a major project in another town, it was initially turned down, they said, because there were insufficient roofs. And what that means is there's not enough people within a certain market. They do market levels. In downtown Derby, and I have said this publicly at meetings in Shelton when I'm presenting over there, that their main, first of all, as a Valley, I can say this, as a Derbyite, I can say this, the two downtowns to me are a single downtown. But the competition for downtown Shelton is downtown Derby, which will flourish when the work is done and when the developments are finished. And this is one of the developments, 32 one-bedroom apartments. But when these developers come in to do it, they need to make money. I often laugh when opponents say to me, all the developers want to do is make money. And I always get up and say, thank you, we both agree on something, because I've never met a client, a developer, who doesn't want to make money. They all want to make money. I've never had anybody come to me and say, could you help me lose money? So they come over to make money. And usually the developers I've worked with and developers you have in Derry are upstanding developers, but who have to look at the financial cost of it. So the way they do it is the cost per key. That's the way they look at it when you're doing high density residential. So you input a lot of factors into that, two of which are the tax base of the town, the sewer, the infrastructure costs of the town. And it is just the unfortunate situation, not the fault of anybody, but the unfortunate situation of the way we have our property taxing system in the state of Connecticut, with 169 little fiefdoms having to fend for themselves and being affected by geography. You could be in one location and have a benefit of 3 million square feet of ratables, and you could be in a town that you don't have the ratables. So when development comes to that town, the developers need to look at these costs. And therefore, with respect to our claim, we have filed or requested for the tax abatement or tax incentive or tax stabilization. These things are very important for a developer going forward, because they need to look out a number of years to make sure they can afford their development costs. Right now, I'll be very honest with you because I've made this presentation numerous times now. Right now, major source of economic development in most communities is high-density residential. People in Chelton were shocked to find out that when you eliminate Bob Cinto's 3 million square feet of Class A office and you look at the next 10 top taxpayers, two of which are utilities, which own large pieces of land, five of them are high-density residential. And you are getting the high-density residential. Tax incentives, tax abatement, are not to give away the store, but they are to work with a developer to help them establish their costs going forward over a period of time that allows them to be able to develop with some sense of what their costs are going to be going forward. So I would hope that you would work with the client on this in going forward and establishing a tax incentive program. And when you're considering, you've enacted the moratorium, but when you're looking at it, look at it that you need to also work with the developers and bringing them in. Granted, they shouldn't be asking for multiple gifts from Santa Claus. That's not the point of it. What the point of it is to give them some stabilization. I very seldomly have been where Attorney Petrella sits. I've been mostly on the other side, but I did for several years serve as town council in Oxford. And during that time, when the power plant was coming in, there was a substantial discussion on a long-term tax abatement or tax stabilization. And I got to learn the benefits of it as it relates to developers. So I hope you will go forward with it. I hope you will work with my clients in developing it. And I will tell you this, that looking at the development at the OUI building, those one-bedroom apartments on the top floor, you will have probably the greatest view of the River Valley that you can ever have. So thank you very much, and I'm willing to answer any questions that you have on it.
Any questions for during time?
I have one. So yeah. Will there be some kind of plan presented to us so we can see?
I will just tell you this. I'm the land use attorney. I was called in at the last minute from the bullpen today because Roger Salway, who has spoken with my client, Mr. Vole, is actually in Sweden with his son with the U18 American hockey team playing in some regional match. So I am that. Yes, they will have to submit to you a detail. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure whether it's a tax incentive or tax stabilization. They're to me, I'm not the tax lawyer. I'm the land use lawyer, but I deal with them.
Attorney Thomas, good to see you as well. Would it make sense then for this board to table this and push this over for a month so that
my understanding is it doesn't have to go to the Board of Assessment Appeals or something? No? No. Assessment Appeals, the Board of Apportionment and Taxation. No, it doesn't? Okay.
No. So I, with those questions, rather than belabor this, so we appreciate coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
But that way we can get the plan and you can see the numbers and act on it maybe at the next meeting.
Yeah, as long as the client is still eligible, I think that's the key point. Yeah.
You heard the exception.
Yeah, right.
You're the exception to the new moratorium.
Okay. And thank you very much. Okay.
All right.
And Jack was taller than me in the picture back then and still is now.
I just want to see Spoonie standing next to the two of you.
What?
I said, I just want to see Spoonie standing next to the two of you.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I'll tell you one thing that
years ago, I was the honored to be the presenter when Jack received the Gold Seal Award from the chamber. And I brought the picture and I put it behind me and I promised $150 to the charity of your choice if you could pick out the two of us. Now, the trick was, I told them, you were not allowed to cheat like we did, which was a twin, because Jack and Jim were identical twins. So when we were playing sports, we would just yell out, twin, you know what I mean? And one of them would turn around and we would talk to them. And so you had a 50-50 shot, because Jim was down about five or six people, I think, in the front row from Jack, and I was standing next to Jack. Problem was, that was the last year that I did not wear glasses.
So everybody was going by me. But the funniest thing was when they would run their fingers. We had 81, what do we have, John? 81 kids in the class? 84 in the class. And the front steps of St. Mary's Church, they would run their fingers and they would start going up. And then I would slap their hand and say, I'm not that tall now. What are you looking up there for? But no one was able to pick it, but we still donated the money. Thank you very much.
Good seeing you, John.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, motion.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I do have a question. The Derby Middle School principal was trying to get on before during her presentation because she wanted to speak. She finally got on and wants to know if she's able to speak.
I don't have a problem with that. If she's on. Rachel, are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, guys. How are you? Sorry, I was having a hard time getting on. So I just wanted to clarify a couple of points and questions that I could hear you guys because I was watching on Facebook, but I'm on now. So we will be utilizing, the plan would be to utilize the grants that I currently have at Derby Middle School. So specifically, I have a school improvement grant, and that is what is being utilized to fund the after-school enrichment for our student artists. Obviously, anything that we would want to put on the building in any way would need official approval. I have gone to the Board of Education's Plants and Facilities Committee to share our ideas, and we do have their support. But ultimately, Derby Middle School is a city building because we do not have that CO. So that is why it came to you guys to have the conversation. So that is partially why, because the Board of Education, while has the support, wouldn't be able to give us that authorization to put the mural on the outside. The area we're looking at is if you're up at the middle school where the blacktop is, that back wall, that's the back end of the gymnasium. So the area that faces the water tower and the street when you come up would be where we'd be looking to put it. And I know Mr. Heider has some questions about the materials. I think there's a bunch of different ideas that they have shared. Some are like put on panels where they're screwed in so that if over time it did need to come down, it could come down and not necessarily destroy the whole surface. So there's all of that would have to be planned out and obviously shared and presented. But they were just looking, or we were looking to kind of bring the idea to you guys to see if you would consider us moving forward with the potential of putting a mural on the building, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Rich, it was on for discussion only tonight, so it's not on for action tonight.
All right.
But in the future, we can put it on for action and let the board vote.
Perfect.
Does any of the board members have any questions for Rachel?
Rachel. Your favorite former Board of Education member. I didn't know you were a great muralist all these years while I was on the board.
I am not, George, but we have amazing children who can draw and do the work, and I'll gladly paint the little square, but I'll leave it to the true professionals, which are our kids and outside professionals. So it would be a combination of an artist that comes in, and the kids would be able to contribute to it as well, ultimately with someone making sure it's perfect, been beautiful, but the kids, you know, would be able to contribute. And that would be all of the kids, right? It wouldn't just be Derby Middle School kids because it's really for the whole community. So the hope would be able to get community members and everyone involved in the process.
Very good. Thank you. Nice to see you too.
I just had the place. I just have a good space, they thought, yes. I guess, on that brick wall.
Hi, Rachel. I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
What size are you looking at? Are you looking at the entire wall? Because no, I know there's a sign currently hanging on the wall.
Yeah, there's a little sign there on the top, so it would be like below that sign in between the windows. It would not be that entire surface.
Okay.
And again, that's all to be determined, but we would leave that sign's been there forever, and then kind of fit it in between the windows. And there's been some discussion about is it the history of the schools, so is it previous buildings that were schools here in Derby on it. That's why the kids are starting to do research about the community to try to come up with some ideas of what represents Derby. And then how do we incorporate some of the educational aspects as well into it?
Yeah, I like that. I think it's important that it represent the entirety of the city, you know, and the historical aspect of it is a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? She said they weren't sure. They're still in the process. Right. We don't know the square footage, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we don't know that yet. They said they were just trying to come up with ideas first when the kids have, it's really just started the after school activity. And ultimately, if we can't do anything on the outside, the kids will still have the opportunity to do, you know, different artwork within the building. That was just part of the idea, was through the Cultural Commission, had approached and said, you know, hey, do you have a place? And we said, yep, this area would be okay. So it's kind of a joint effort in a couple different groups.
Okay. All right, Rach, thank you for coming on. And it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Okay, so we do need to have a motion to table the tax incentive application for 33 Elizabeth Street. Do I have a motion?
So moved. Sarah.
Second.
So moved by Sarah, second by Rob. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, 8.6, Water Pollution Control Authority requests for 2 bid waivers for emergency repairs. Mr. Walsh and Mr. Abel?
Well, I want to start by thanking Dominic for blowing my cover. I've always tried to be a lot younger, and now you know I'm not. So, and I also want to thank Dominic, because if you go down Main Street, former Bankers Row, there's a plaque on every one of those buildings, and Dominic paid for the one on his building. So the point I was making before. This time I'm going kind of from the penthouse to the outhouse, talking about sewers after the great history of Derby. But, you know, I've been here before, and, you know, we do have an old plant, and we've got serious issues that are beyond our control in some cases. And, you know, you helped us last year when we, we lost the belt, and we had to take emergency action that required a waiver, and you gave us the waiver. And I'm pleased to report that, you know, that new system is under construction at the moment, and we'll have that in place, and it's going to be a big savings for us, and it will also be incorporated in the new facility when we finally get to that level. But things continue to break, and they're costly to fix, and they also come at great risk. A couple of weeks ago, we had a blower issue, which was mentioned. I'm going to leave it to Ed to be the expert on that, but we had a blower issue, which is bad because we lost the equipment, but it was also bad because it caused the spillage into the river. And, you know, as soon as you have a spillage in the river, we are mandated to immediately report it to DEEP, and we did. And luckily, I think they understand our situation. But if you don't correct those things, you're subject to fine. Okay, so this immediately creates a crisis situation for us. And we met a week ago, trying to decide, we need to get this done as soon as possible. And at the time, it looked as though that we only had one option, and we still basically don't have all kinds of options, but we need to do this quickly. And we thought we'd need a bid waiver in order to do this, because anything over $15,000, I think, requires that. Well, that's nice when you've got all kinds of people who are going to bid for you, but it's not so nice when you have single sources for the equipment that you need. Now, I'm not an expert on that, so I'm going to turn it over to Ed Abel to talk about what he's discovered in the meantime and what we need to do to see if we indeed need your permission. You know, I'll give you 2 good things to go along with. First of all, even though we haven't had our public hearing, we won't have it until next week, there will be no increase in rates from WPCA this year. It will stay flat. And I lost my train of thought for the other one. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. The other train of thought is we have the money in our budget to cover the cost of this expensive repair. So we're not asking for money. We've got the money. And I think we've always tried to run a financially responsible WPCA. And people say, well, you know, you have money in reserves. You'll see tonight why we have money in reserves. So let me turn it over to Ed.
Good evening, everyone. So as Mr. Walsh said, we lost our main plant blower about 2 weeks ago. We have one redundancy blower that's been in operation ever since. The problem with this blower is it was installed in late 1999, early 2000s. So this blower has its own issues. And since that has been up and running, it's already went down once for about a half an hour. which is what caused the spillage that Mr. Walsh was talking about. We don't have a lot of options. We have more over the last couple of days than we had a few weeks ago. When we were first looking at it, it looked as if the only thing we could do for the time being is to get the parts from the manufacturer that whose equipment we broke down. It is it's selective to the manufacturer. For some reason, I can't say that word. but in the meantime, we've been working. We've been doing our due diligence with our city engineers, looking for what we could possibly do. What we don't want to do is we don't want to waste any city money. We want to do everything we can to ensure whatever route we go is going to be available to use in the upgrade, and it's not going to be wasted. So working with the engineers over the past couple of weeks, what we were able to do is use the upgraded technology, and for the cost of the repairs alone, which were $84,000, we have four quotes from four other vendors for the same type of blower system, ranging from $82,000 brand new up to $190,000. So what we'd like to do at this point, which is the quote that came in yesterday, is go with one of the newer blowers that, as we were doing the plant upgrade, this is the blower that we'll be able to install now and the blowers that we're going to be going with in the future when we do the full plant upgrade. So there'll be no wasted money in the meantime. And the cost of the repairs alone, as I stated, were $83,344. And that's just the repairs to get this one blower back up and running. For the new blower, which is can be built in 3 to 4 weeks, delivered in no more than 4 weeks, is $82,800.
Any questions for Ed?
It's cheaper for the new one.
It is, because it's newer technology and it's more efficient.
Mr. Walsh, you also said that the money's in the budget. Is this coming out of the referendum money?
No.
Okay, good.
We'll put it this way.
Hit the button, Jack.
If we determine that it will be used in the new facility, then we might go back and ask for an opinion if it could be. But right now, The WPCA authorized the expenditure of up to $120,000 to solve this problem. Okay, so it turns out Ed has found what looks to be a cheaper and better solution, but we already approved up to $120,000 out of WPCA funds, not bond funds. So that's, any other questions?
I may just be missing. Is this, so that's for a new blower, not a is a the rental a rental included in what's being asked? Because I'm just what we got in the packet.
Yes, ma'am.
What we're being asked to vote on tonight.
Okay. Just to clarify, so when I first put this packet together, it was about a week or so ago. And the only option we had at that time was to replace the parts of the existing blower that we have. Now, the lead time to get those parts is 8 to 10 weeks out. So because we have one blower that could run for another 2 weeks, it could run for another 2 years, we don't know. We were looking, and the state was asking us what we were going to do in the interim. So we were looking at renting a blower. We have three different quotes. We have two quotes, one of which, the third one, is from the vendor that we're looking to purchase from. They offered us a lease to own agreement as well, if that was something that we were interested in. The problem with the other two rentals that we had is everyone that we talked to would love to rent us a piece of equipment. When we asked all of those vendors to come out and say, listen, we want to do this right. We don't want to rent a piece of equipment and then have it delivered. It costs $20,000 and we don't know what we're doing. We want you to come out and tell us exactly what we need, what it's going to cost. We couldn't get anybody to do that. They wanted us to take a chance on ourselves and act like we knew what we were doing, and we weren't going to do that and waste any money. So with that, the blower that we are looking at can be built in 3 to 4 weeks. What we like about this company is the manufacturer is out of New York, and they keep spare parts all of the components on shelf. So if we buy this, if we're able to purchase this, they're going to build a cabinet, which is going to take about 3 weeks. They're going to put a temporary blower in there, a unit in there, a core that they have on the shelf. That is what they use for a rental. They're going to install that. And once the new core is manufactured, then they're going to switch that back out at no cost to us. This way it'll get in even sooner.
So that is included in the $97,800?
This would be $82,800.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think Mr. Mayor and members of the board, so, and Mr. Abel, so I think what we need for the record is, what are you asking for? Which company and how much? And for what?
So what we are asking for at this point would be the approval for a bid waiver to purchase a Neuros blower for a total amount of $82,800. There will be other costs included. We are going to try with our in-house staff to put it in and get it up and running. We are working with our engineering firm that is going to do all the design specs and put that in. So there will be a little bit of cost there. If anything, we were talking about this earlier today, there may be another 10% of the total cost if we have to go out and hire someone to put it in, if that's the job is too big for us to do in-house.
Which company is it?
Neuros. $82,800. Yes, ma'am.
And that includes any rental or whatever else.
It does, yes, sir.
Okay, so we're just asking for the bid waiver.
Sure. It's a bid waiver under Charter Section 55.
Wait, sir, you gotta do it.
Any other questions?
I do. Oh. Sorry. Just one last question. Is there how long does it take to actually induct this new piece of equipment, and then is there a calibration period before it goes live?
From what they're telling us, the installation, if we do it ourselves, would depend on the engineering process. We're going to need to figure out what kind of equipment we're going to need to buy to be able to get it in line with our existing blower. Once we remove that, any piping material, they come out, they do the setup and the initial calibration.
Any other questions? Is there a motion on the table? Made by Ron Sill. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Rob. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? You have your bid waiver.
Thank you, everyone.
Good luck.
Okay. Number 10, executive session. Make a motion to go into executive session for 2 Factory Street, Derby Public Library Collective Bargaining Agreement, and Derby City Hall Union Collective Bargaining Agreement. We'll invite Attorney Petrilla, Attorney Testa, and I think that's all we need. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
By Amy. Is there a second?
Second, Sarah.
Second, Sarah. All in favor? Opposed? You gonna let the people in there? Oh, all right. So we're coming out of executive session at 9:05. Do I have a motion to come out?
Double.
Made by Ron. Is there a second? Second by Robin. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, 11.1, Derby Public Library Union Collective Bargaining Agreement, Labor Negotiations, Discussion, Possible Action.
Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the City of Derby.
Motion made by Sarah. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by George. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 11.2, Derby City Hall Union Collective Bargaining Agreement, Labor Negotiations, Discussion and Possible Action.
I'd like to make a motion to authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city of Derby.
Made by Sarah. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ron. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Number 12.
Mr. Mayor, Mark Ruffalo, town clerk. The question was answered. I asked today about regarding the makeup of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I did check. There are, with Mr. Harris on the board now, there are three registered Democrats, two registered Republicans, two registered unaffiliated voters. Mr. Sadlick came down last week. He was made himself from unaffiliated to Democrat. And then that's the seven regular members. And then we have one Republican alternate, Mr. Blisman. So, and the ordinance for to refresh you is says that not more than five members from the same party can be on the board.
Mr. Garvalo, thank you so much for that.
No problem. I know there was great interest on that matter. So,
thank you for checking into that for us.
Happy.
So the appointment the appointment's good. So, all right, number 12, Ron.
Motion to adjourn at 9:07.
Second.
Second.
All right. Made by Sarah, Amy, whoever. Motion carries. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. It's been a long day.